Thanks for coming along this afternoon. I appreciate it's just after lunch, so I hope you had your coffee. I've set my laser pointer to stun, so anyone falling asleep, you'll know about it. So this is going to be a talk on the Cloud Stack Usage Service and how that hangs together. First, a little bit about myself. I'm a cloud architect with ShapeBlue. I've been with ShapeBlue for about 3 or 4 years now. Worked with Cloud Stack since early cloud.com days, so 2010, 2011 or so. So worked with Cloud Stack through various jobs in various capacities through the years. Seen it from both an operational side as well as from a more design and engineering point of view. Apart from that, work very much with anything to do with virtualization, VMware vSphere, Citrix, and KVM. And automation, those of you who know we love Ansible, so we try to automate as much as we can. So this is going to be a talk on the Cloud Stack Usage Service. For those of you who are hardcore Cloud Stack users, you probably know some of this stuff before, so this is more of an introduction, a bit of a technical deep dive into how it hangs together, how we install it, how we configure it, and so on. So just a show of hands, those of you who are here, who uses the usage service, who, yeah, Pierre and Germans, yeah, who's an expert? You guys are, I know that. So we'll talk a bit about how it's configured, how the data process flow works through the user service runs, how we can query it, how we can troubleshoot it, and so on. So, high level, the usage service is a service that tracks all your consumption of resources in Cloud Stack, and gives us the ability to summarize that data into billable units and show who's uses what users you have over any time period. That data you can then query directly in the database. You can query it through the Cloud Stack Data API, or you can link it up to a billing platform, which Pierre will do a talk a bit later on today about how his Amista platform ties into Cloud Stack as well, how that utilizes data to actually do a proper billing backend for Apache Cloud Stack. So to start off with, just a couple of words on how we install the usage service. Very straightforward. If you've done Cloud Stack management installations, it's just a question of either Yum install or apt install the usage service on top of your Cloud Stack management service. If you go and look after installation on how things hang together, you'll see that the usage service actually has symbolic links to the DB properties files that are being used by the Cloud Stack management backend database. So we share the DB properties files, we share the key files, etc. It runs with its own log4j log configuration files. That's what's different there. But yeah, the same config files as you use for Cloud Stack management is what's also used for the Cloud Stack usage service. Few words on global settings, just to jump straight in at the deep end. A few global settings here for enabling the user service, a few time zone settings and so on. The two important ones that I'm going to talk about today is the user stats job aggregation range, which is a timing setting that determines how you aggregate time blocks of used Cloud Stack resources. So if we set that to, for example, 1440, that means that the usage service aggregates over 24 hours. If it's 60 minutes, it aggregates over 1 hour, etc. We'll talk a bit later about how you can manage that, because there's certain situations you want to avoid when you configure and run your Cloud Stack usage services. Second setting here is the usage stats job exec time, which determines when the user service is first kicked off. The timing mechanism of how often these usage aggregation jobs run is a combination of these two, and we'll briefly touch on that later on. So If you start looking at data flow in CloudStack, we need to start looking at usage events and types. So everything that we do in CloudStack is tied to lifecycle events. So you create a VM, you destroy a VM at the end of its lifetime, you start and stop that VM. If it's an IP address, you assign an IP address or request an IP address, you release that again. So everything works in pairs. You have a start and a stop of every type of usage. So the different usage types that we then have in CloudStack, we have about 25 of them at the moment. We've jumped in numbering at some point. But the important thing here is just to make a note, a mental note of the integer that I'm having in the first part of the table here. So in other words, a usage type of 1 is a running VM. A usage type of 2 is an allocated VM. So in other words, the usage type number 2 starts when you create the VM and stops when you destroy that VM. However, you might just create that VM and not start it. So when you then start it a day later and stop it the day after that, that falls under running VM usage, which is usage type number 1. And you can follow the same logic through the whole table here. You will see this is from a 4. This might be from a 4.12 installation. So not out yet, but you'll see here we have some usage types that are just making their way in with the new backup and recovery framework that we have. We done a talk on that? Yeah, we might have, yeah. There's some new ones making their way in at the bottom here. So if we then look at how these flows work, we start on the CloudStack side. So this is purely before user service is even involved. When we do anything in CloudStack, it's tied to an API call. So the CloudStack Management Service receives that API call. It processes it, and it writes a lifecycle event to the Cloud Usage Event table. So if you check your usage event table, you'll see that has entries for everything, or should have entries for everything that happens in your infrastructure. If we then move to how the usage service utilizes that data, we kick the user service job off at, as I mentioned earlier, the user status job exec time, which by default is set to something like 15:15. On top of that, we then run it every user status job aggregation range time. So in other words, if we set one to 15:15, the other one to 24 hours or 1440 minutes, we find this job will run once every 24 hours. If you set the second one to every 60 minutes, the job will run every 60 minutes, effectively. So first thing that happens is all the events from the Cloud Usage Event table are copied to Cloud Usage Event. Now, I should probably point out that the naming conventions here aren't great. We sometimes use the same table names in both the CloudStack Management database as we do in the usage database. So just pay attention to which database we're talking about at any point in time. Last thing we also do is we copy the account table. So obviously, if we run a usage job at 4:00 in the afternoon based on yesterday's data, we want to know which account was accountable for any usage or any resource usage. So we take a reference, a copy of the account table as well. Next thing we do is we summarize each usage type per account, and we populate what we call helper tables. The helper tables are the first step of aggregating all this data into something that we can use. So in other words, we know that the VM started on the 1st of the month. We know that it stopped on the 15th of the month. So the helper table, as I'll show you in a minute, actually then now tracks what these pairs of usage lifecycle events, what they do at any point in time. And the last step is we then aggregate the data out of the usage helper accounts, helper tables, and put them into the cloud usage table. And what effectively happens at that point in time is we divide it up into billable blocks of resource usage. So we look at how many hours a VM was running in any 24-hour period, for example. We know that a VM was running for 12 hours in the 24-hour period between the 1st and the 2nd of the month, for example. And that's what we can then pull out to report on, do billing on, and so on. So we start looking at how these tables all hang together. I've cheated here and just used MySQL Workbench because it does a better job of rendering things than I do. So if we look at a usage event here, in this case, for VM events, and in this case, I've chosen resource ID 6. Doesn't really matter at this point in time. Resource ID 6, in this case, refers to a resource called PPVM3. And here we can see through the life cycle of this VM, on the 6th of September, it was created, it was started. On the 9th, it was stopped and then destroyed. So again, we've completed the life cycle of those events. So that would be seen in the usage event. And if you start digging through the usage event table, obviously you'll see a lot. Well, you'll see all the events of everything that's happening in your infrastructure at any point in time. So if we then move on to helper tables, the helper tables now take that data that we saw in the usage event tables and summarize them in single entries, in single rows in the helper tables. So we started looking at them. Jumping ahead a bit. But we have these helper tables for every type of usage, for every usage type. So all those 28 or whatever usage type we have will have their own helper tables. Worth noting that those helper tables don't all have the same schema. Well, you'll start seeing that when you start looking at these tables, that the schema does not always follow the same format. So if we, in this case, look at my usage VM instance helper table, just for one specific account, account number 4, we can see here that in this case, because its context is a VM instance, we have a usage type of 1 or 2. So again, our create and destroy VMs, as well as our start and stop VMs. And we see in this case, usage type number 1, some number 2, which is the create event. We had a start date of the 6th. We have an end date of the 20th in this case. So we know that that's the create and destroy date. If you look at the same VM, we can see then that it was running from about the same time, so 13:04 on the 6th, and it was stopped, well, it was pretty much stopped and destroyed at the same time. So we can see here, in this case, we put together all the helper table data for 2 different usage types. Yeah. Again, just to highlight the same issue again. So, in this case, we're looking at usage storage. Storage is simpler. We don't we use different storage types, but it's only one usage type in this helper table, and we simply run with a created, deleted timestamp. Obviously, when it comes to storage and snapshots and so on, we're also interested in what the size is of anything we do, how big a snapshot, i.e., how much space is a client utilizing on our primary and secondary storage. IP addresses, very straightforward. They're either assigned or they're not assigned. In this case, it's purely down to number of IP addresses, how much you want to charge for each one of them, and so on. So it's an assigned and released timestamp that we have in our helper tables. So once we have our helper tables all populated, we now aggregate the data in those helper tables into billable units, effectively. And this is where our aggregation range comes into place, where we're saying how many hours, how much time was each usage type utilized in any aggregation period. So in other words, if our aggregation time is 1440 minutes, how many hours in that 1440 minutes did we actually run that VM? So the same thing as if you go and look at, if you're an Amazon customer, they'll tell you exactly how many hours that you've ran a VM in any day, in any month. When it comes to thinking of time is one thing, storage is another thing. So if you have 1 meg and utilize it for 1,000 hours, that's going to cost you a lot less than if you have 10 gig that you utilize for the same amount of time. So you want to aggregate based on those figures. So if we now start looking at the actual cloud usage table, hopefully you can actually read all of this. But if we see here, I've just taken an excerpt here from beginning of a month and the end of a month. So if we look at the usage type, first of all, we've just said for a specific account, what is our cloud usage during, well, in this case, we've just said, give us everything for that account. So we see here we have our usage types, which is from our usage table from earlier. We have our raw usage. Now, in this case, we see they're all time-based. So in this case, obviously on the first day that PPVM1 was running, it only ran for 10.9 hours. And then we skip forward to the end of the month where we've not switched it off and on in that time. So everything has been running for 24 hours in any 24-hour period. Resource ID is what effectively points back to what the usage refers to. In this case, we know that usage ID, so resource ID number 3 points to PPVM1. So in that case, it's in the context of the VM. If we look at in the middle here, we have ISO. So we know that it's ISO number 202 in this case. So you have to keep in mind that it's all relative to the usage type in question. If we have a storage type usage being calculated, we're obviously also interested in the volume or snapshot size as well. Last thing is, it tells us what time period that happened in. So in this case, we have 10.9 hours. That 10.9 hours was utilized between the 6th of September at midnight and the 6th at 23:59:59. If you want to query the usage through the CloudStack API, you can do that with something like CloudMonkey. And obviously, the API there is simply just CloudMonkey, just list usage records. You obviously need to know and build that query yourself. Everything is now based on UUIDs rather than names, etc. So you need to know what you're looking for. And obviously, in this case, you can use whatever output format you want from the CloudStack API. In this case, it's JSON, so you could use something like JQ to actually parse that and get useful data out of it. No saying this is the best way of doing it. Ultimately, it depends on what your use case is and what your endpoint is that actually queries this. So we now start looking at some reporting examples. So in this case, I'm going to be looking for running VMs. So in other words, usage type number 1 for the account of Bruce Banner during September. And we want to summarize for the number of hours each VM is running. So in this case, and if there's any DBAs in the room, more than happy if you want to correct me on my SQL queries, but we look for all the information from the cloud usage table. We do a link to the cloud usage account table, just so we know which account is involved. We look at start dates that are any time in September. Usage type is number 1, so that's our running VMs. Account name is Bruce Banner in this case. And what we then result in is we can see that for Bruce Banner VM number 1 has been running for 268 hours, BBVM 2 for 25 hours, and so on. So you now have a report that you can use for any reporting purposes, be it for bill back, scare back, report back, whatever you want to call it in your organization. Moving on to network utilization. In In this case, similar, we summarize for our raw usage, because for network utilization, the raw usage is the number of bytes that we've actually consumed over a network at any point in time. Do some calculations, just get that down as megabytes instead of bytes. Again, summarize over the month of September. Usage type, in this case, 4 or 5, which is traffic sent and traffic received. And we group by account and by usage type. So again, we can see here for Peter Parker, we have sent 22 meg. We have received 3.8 gig effectively. Moving on to any storage-based queries. And this is where I've simplified this a bit just to make sure our calculations are right. We now do a few more joins. We join to our account table because we want to know what account is using what. We do a join back to the actual cloud database, to the volumes table, just because that's not information we have in the usage database. Same thing for the VM instance table. We just link back so we can get things like VM names and so on. And we aggregate over start dates, usage type ETH number 6, which is storage utilization, and account name, in this case, just for the account of Peter Parker. So what we end up with at that point in time is, if you look at Peter Parker VM1, in this case, the root disk is 2 gig. It was used for 343 hours. So depending on how you do your billing, you're effectively billing the client for 687 gigabyte hours of use during that month. If you look at line number 3 there, we see that the data disk, PP data 1, isn't actually attached to any instance at this point in time, but the disk itself is 5 gig, was used for 586 hours, and therefore you have 2,934 gigabyte hours of use in the month of September. To finish off with these reporting examples, just a simpler example of IP address usage, port forwarding, and VPN users. Again, keep in mind, just go back and refer to the usage type table that we looked at earlier, and you can pretty much summarize on anything you want. But in this case, yeah, our usage types are 3, 12, and 14. Again, summarize in a similar way. And if we look here, we just pull in the description for this. We can see that Bruce Banner used IP address 10.135.173 for 566 hours in the month of September. If we look at our port forwarding rules, we have rule 20 was used for 586 hours. And at the bottom here, we have a Bruce Banner VPN user 1 has been used for 95 hours in the month of September. So I'll give you some examples just how to start pulling data out. Takes a bit of time to just build these queries, make sure that you get the data that you want, but as you can see, it's all there, it's all ready for you, and your DBAs and your business analysts can certainly pull out this data into usable reports for billing purposes or reporting purposes. So moving on to troubleshooting. In the usage database, we also have a usage job table. That usage job table tracks how the usage service itself runs, when it runs and what start and end dates it utilizes at any time when it goes through its aggregation dates and times. So we can see here that in this case, I only have one management server, so we see management server 1, the PID, the process ID of the user server. And we can see there that user service just keeps updating a heartbeat in this table. And we can see when it ran. We have a success there. We have start date, end date that it utilized for its aggregation time at that point. In my example, ignore the fact that this PID keeps changing. That's because I've been fast-forwarding in time and kept killing services. In your database, you probably find that PID will stay stay the same unless you restart services. So when the user service starts up, it'll first of all check whether its last scheduled job was ran. So for example, if you switched it off, then it might be that yesterday's billing run didn't, or reporting run didn't run, so it'll rerun that. If it's been offline for any longer, then you have to manually rerun some of those processes. And I'll show you on the next slide how that works. One thing to keep in mind, that if your execution time starts taking longer than your aggregation time, then you start getting into problems, because you then start having processes running in parallel, where if your aggregation time is 60 minutes, but the actual reporting jobs take 120 minutes, then obviously it means that the second job comes along whilst the first one is still running. It's a situation you want to avoid. So it's worthwhile just keeping an eye on the exec time there, making sure that doesn't go through the roof. I've had some questions on multiple management servers. How do multiple cloud stack management servers manage the process between them? And as you can see here, because we track the host name and the PID there, it effectively boils down to, in its most simplistic form, that the first management server that starts its user service will write its entry in here with its PID, it'll write its heartbeat there. The second user server will come along, try to start up, and it'll say, well, hang on, I can see a heartbeat in this table, so I'm going to take a backseat view. And it'll only kick in if the first one fails to heartbeat. Logging. We have everything in Varlog Cloud like usage.log. They're relatively verbose. You can pretty much sit and read through every calculation, every consideration that the user service does for every usage event, and when it populates the helper tables and aggregates the data. One thing that we sometimes, or relatively often, I think we have, in fact, if I look at my queue at the moment, I think I have two or three tickets based on this at the moment, where people start complaining that they're getting billed for things that they release. So billed for IP addresses they no longer use, etc. What we sometimes see is that there's database inconsistencies, especially around the events tables. So in other words, something will pop in here with a stop entry without a start entry existing, or it might have multiples, might have multiple destroys or multiple starts. At that point in time, obviously the user service doesn't 100% know what to do with those entries. So it either fails or it makes some wrong calculations and reports incorrectly. Now, most of the time what we do here is just go backwards, look at how we can fix those inconsistencies. In other words, we tend to jump all the way back to the beginning, we look at the event table, and we update that. If we have two starts, for example, and only one stop, then we go and delete that extra start entry. If we're missing something, we can always inject it. The one thing to keep in mind is that the user service was up to date at its last execution time. So if a end user tells you that, hang on, I'm being billed for the IP address that I released on the 15th of the month, it's now the end of the month, there's no way for you to backdate that without starting to delete out a lot of entries in the cloud usage table. So what you generally have to do is set the end time for today such that as of today, the client's no longer getting billed for that IP address. Unfortunately, that does mean, obviously, you need to explain to the client that, yes, you're not going to get billed. You have to sort that manually, the actual reporting, even that there's no way of backdating that data in the actual cloud usage table. If you have your user status aggregation range set to quite low, for example, 1 hour, I think it has been mentioned by some of our friends over the last couple of weeks that they run this quite low. the user database might get quite large. You do have the ability to run an API called Remove Raw Usage Records, which tidies up the usage, cloud usage entries for a certain time period. So you tend to use that if, for example, you run a monthly billing cycle. You just want to cut down on the amount of data in there. So you say, well, hang on, I can delete previous month's data. In that case, you give it an interval of 31 days, which basically says any data older than 31 days can be deleted out of the cloud usage table. If, on the other hand, you need to regenerate usage data, so in other words, for some reason your usage data, user service was offline, you can use the Generate Usage Records API with a start and end date and rerun that job manually, effectively. If there's overlap, so in other words, if the user service says, well, hang on, I already have data from the 28th of September through to the 30th, it will just skip that. It will not do an overwrite per se. Couple of comments on the quota tables. So if you look in your usage database, you see a few tables called quota something. They are not directly linked to the user service itself. They're used by the quota service, which I don't think anyone uses a quota service. No? Anyone know what it is? No. So quota service is a different service that is not necessarily tied to monetary values. It's tied to a token value where you can assign token costs to any resource. So you can say an end user gets 100 tokens and a VM costs you 10 tokens. So you can only use 100 tokens worth of resources. That might be 10 VMs or it might be 100 IP addresses of one token each. And it limits the end user's consumption of your cloud stack resources. I'm not going to go any deeper into that. I've added the links to the wiki for this, and there's some notes in the CloudStack documentation as well. So that's basically the end of the technical part. Any questions on what I've gone through so far? All good? Marcus? Yeah, there's nothing stopping you running a server with just the usage service and not the management service. If you were to switch off the management service on a server where the usage service runs, it won't cause an impact. I don't know how it works in install time, right enough. Yeah, you might have to just copy the DB properties file from a running CloudStack management server. I'd have to go and play with that one to give you the right answer. But yeah, the two of them are separate services that aren't interlinked per se.
Okay, and one more. So the aggregation range, that controls when the jobs are run, is that correct?
Yeah, it's correct. There's a question I hope no one would ask, because I don't personally like the way that timing is set up. Keep in mind that the user service has been around for a number of years, and there's certain things like that might need a little bit of TLC to get it sorted. But the way it works, and I think Nicholas, see me right here, because I think you helped me with the code lookups on this one. The exec time, so that's set to 12:15, for example. When you start the server, do you want to take this one? Yeah, no. When we start the user service, it determines when its first runtime is. So it says, right, my first exec time is 12:15. It then says, right, what's my aggregation time thereafter? So let's say we set that to 1 hour. It then sets out a map that says 12:15, 12:01, 12:02, 12:03, etc. That does mean that once you've started that service, it's sort of made up its mind exactly when it's going to run those services at any point in time. What's the there's a niche case there, isn't there? Yeah, it won't be set until... Yeah, so that's right. So we're saying, right, okay, if it's set to 9:15 and I'm now starting the service at 9 and you set the aggregation time to 1 hour, it's going to wait till 9:15 before it says, that's my first execution time and I'm going to do 1:15. It doesn't go, hang on, I should really run this once every hour, which, if I started at 9 a.m., would be 9:15. It doesn't do that. It waits till 9:15, and then kicks it off the first time. So there's some things there that could do with some improvements. Personally, I would like to see a cron tab type configuration where you don't have the scenario where you kick it off and it just sets its own schedule forever and ever thereafter. It should just rather do it on a set schedule that you can change at any point in time. But I'm sure the engineers will laugh at me because it's not as easy as that as it always is. Does that answer your question? Ultimately, we're running on hours here. As you could see in the examples there, you saw it was all down to number of hours. If you had an aggregation time, in this example of 60 minutes, it would say, right, in the first hour, yeah, that was only 0.5 of an hour that ran. The second hour was a whole hour. Third hour was a whole hour. And then it comes to the very end where we destroy that VM and says, all right, it was alive for half an hour. In this case, the examples I showed you, we had 24 hours. It said, well, I had 11 hours of usage in that first 24-hour period. And then it just kept on going with 24 hours, 24 hours, 24 hours, till the last day when we said, right, only 13 hours or something like that was utilized.
So it's always hourly regardless of...
Yeah, it calculates number of hours used, yeah. Ultimately, it's up to you how you use that. Some providers will say, well, any started day is a day billed. You know, you only used 1 hour, but I'm going to bill you for that whole day, for example. But I think the most important thing there is just keep an eye on your jobs, especially for likes of yourselves who probably have a fairly big database. Just keep an eye on the exec time that it doesn't start exceeding the aggregation time effectively. Any other questions? Cool. So a few notes to finish off. This talk's based on the blog post up on the Shapely website. Go and have a look at that. It has a few more examples, goes into a bit more detail. There's also a couple of references just to the CloudStack documentation, how the user service works and runs. Slide decks, we'll get up on SlideShare, and yes, various personal information if you want to contact me or check out any of the blogs that I contribute to. And before I finish, if you haven't picked up on it yet, ShapeBlue is hiring, just to get the slide in that Giles wants us to mention. Obviously, if you are interested, come speak to me so I get the hiring bonus and not any of my colleagues. And that's the end of my talk. Thank you very much for